Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
This is our final session in our study of the Kingdom and the Covenant. For the last several weeks, we've been considering godly character traits or godly attributes that make us more effective in Father's kingdom, because it's about Him and His kingdom. And today we're going to consider the godly traits of shrewdness and zeal. Now, you might be thinking, well, I don't see any scriptures that says God is shrewd. Well, let's get into the scriptures and you'll see that He really is, okay? First of all, let's look at shrewdness. The key Greek word here is phronimos, and that has to do with a keen awareness, a sharp intelligence, someone who's known for good judgment or common sense in practical matters. And it's also translated wise, sensible, thoughtful, understanding. It also means crafty or clever or insightful. Now, I went back into the Septuagint to find a few uses of this word, and I found a couple of interesting ones here. Proverbs 14:17 says, a quick-tempered man does foolish things, and a crafty man is hated. Well, the word crafty there in the Septuagint is phronimos. Of course, the Old Testament originally was written in Hebrew, but the Septuagint is the Greek translation. So here, this describes someone who uses their cleverness or insight to take advantage of others. They'll do whatever it takes, okay? A crafty man is hated. They translated it crafty because it's very derogatory, in a very negative sense. We also see a positive use of the same word in Proverbs 11:12. A man who lacks judgment derides his neighbor, but a man of understanding, there's the word, a man of understanding holds his tongue. The word understanding is phronimos in the Septuagint. So this says that a person who exercises good judgment or has common sense in practical matters does not ridicule his neighbor. If you have common sense, you're not going to ridicule your neighbor. Or if you're exercising good judgment, you won't ridicule your neighbor. And we see another use of the word in Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but the harsh word stirs up anger. The word gentle is a translation of in the Septuagint of the Greek word phronimos. So this says that a thoughtful, prudent, or wise answer disarms a person's anger. That's basically what it says. A prudent, thoughtful, or wise answer disarms someone's anger. So phronimos as a word can be used either in positive or negative ways. Any questions or comments about phronimos, of what we've looked at before we get into the New Testament uses of the word? Any questions so far? All right, look at Matthew 7. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, this is Jesus speaking, and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The word wise there is the adjective phronimos. So this says that a person with good judgment or common sense does what Jesus says. Do you see that? Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, doesn't just hear them, but does them, that person is a wise person. And Matthew 10:16, I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves. I've always looked at this verse and thought, what in the world is he talking about here? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I finally looked it up and I found out that the word shrewd there is phronimos. That's actually how I found this verse. I was looking up verses that use phronimos. And I was surprised to find this one. The word shrewd there is phronimos. Now, I looked this up in a lot of commentaries and so forth, and I finally realized what Jesus was saying here, I think. A snake hides from its predators, and it waits quietly for the right moment to strike. Therefore, the snake was considered shrewd or wise. So Jesus told this to his disciples. What was he telling them by using the analogy of being as shrewd as a snake? He certainly wasn't saying be dangerous and be threatening and attacking people. That would be against his nature. So what was he saying by saying you should be as shrewd as snakes? Well, they hide from the predators, right? So they anticipate and avoid danger wherever possible. You think that's a good application? Well, Jesus was saying that his followers, Christians as we call them, believers, should anticipate and avoid danger whenever possible, but still fulfill their mission. You follow me? Avoid danger whenever possible, but still fulfill your mission. In other words, give difficult and dangerous situations careful thought. Avoid danger if at all possible, but be prepared to act regardless of danger.
Right. Yes.
Don't run away and fail to do your mission.
Right.
So that's what it's talking about here. It's not talking about being dangerous like a snake. No, it says be as shrewd as a snake and avoid danger if possible, but await the right opportunity, as a snake would do. Look at Matthew 25. This is a parable of the 10 virgins, or 10 young women. You remember the parable, right? Wedding banquet was coming, 10 young women come, they're going to be part of the wedding party, I suppose, and they're supposed to bring oil lamps. And verse 2 says that 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. Now, the word foolish there is a Greek adjective morose. That means foolish or stupid. That's literally what it means. That means they're devoid of wisdom, good sense, or sound judgment. It's a very derogatory term. You wouldn't want that applied to you, would you? No. It's a very derogatory term. 5 were foolish, 5 were wise. And the word wise there, surprise, is phronimos, which means exercises good judgment or has common sense in practical matters. You know the story. When the bridegroom was coming, they realized he was coming on his way, and the ones who had not brought enough oil had to go buy oil. What did they try to do first? They tried to borrow some from the others who had extra, right? That's a key point, too. I want to bring that up in just a moment. But because the others didn't share their oil, they were so unkind as not to share their oil. No, that wasn't the issue. But because the foolish ones couldn't get more oil, they had to go into town to buy more, and they missed the party, so to speak. They were not allowed to enter. What did the wise young women do that qualified them as wise?
If you do what we got, we ain't gonna have none for stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They were prudent, shrewd, conscious, aware of situation so much that they said, no, if I give you my oil, then I won't have enough.
Right. I ain't going.
What did they do even before the party, before they even arrived, that qualified them as wise?
Well, they recognized that they don't know when he's coming. He's coming sometime at night, mm-hmm. but it could be what we would call early morning.
Yeah, right. At the best man, right? So always
so
be prepared.
The point was, they don't know when he's going to come, so they brought extra oil because they wanted to be prepared for whenever he did come. Okay. Yes. So they did two things here that really qualified them as wise. Number one, they prepared for circumstances, possible circumstances.
Delay.
We might need extra oil. And secondly, they were prudent enough to say, no, if I share my oil with these people who didn't anticipate this problem, then I won't have enough and I won't be invited into the celebration either. I might miss it if I share my oil. All right, let's look at Luke 16. This is Jesus' parable of the shrewd manager. Now, remember now, this is a parable. It's not an actual life experience. This is a parable. This is a story that's designed to make a point. All right? That's the purpose of parables. So this is a parable that Jesus is presenting, and Jesus determines what each character says and does. Okay? That's his capability of making up the parable. He can make the characters in the parable do or say whatever he wants, and he does it judiciously to make a point. And we're going to see what that point is. Now, verse 1 of Luke 16, it begins this parable, and it says that the shrewd manager was about to get fired from his job as a manager because he wasted his boss's possessions, all right? The rich man, his master. They use the term master in their culture. We would use boss in a similar culture situation here. So he was about to get fired from his job as manager because he wasted his boss's or master's possessions. So what did he do whenever the boss fired him?
He called a lot of people in it. He had to lose the boss money and cut the price down so he had some place to go.
He called all the creditors, all the people who owed the boss money, brought them in, and he discounted their bills. One even canceled the bill.
Yeah.
And others, he discounted the bill because it was a really huge bill. In other words, he was being fired because he wasted his boss's possessions, but then when he found out he's going to be fired, he did more of the same, right? Didn't he? He sure did. In fact, if anything, he could have made things worse. Yep, that's exactly what he was doing. He said, I'm going to do this so that they will look on me with favor whenever I'm out of this job. He was self-centered. He was self-motivated, right? Selfishly motivated, excuse me. He was selfishly motivated. But notice how Jesus has the master, the boss, respond to the fired manager's actions of wasting more of his possessions. He called him shrewd. That's phronimos. Listen, he wasn't commended for misusing his boss's property.
Right.
That's not what he was commended for.
No.
He was commended for having insight, for having foresight, and preparing himself for what he was about, for what was about to happen to him. And that is the story of this parable. The point is, he did what he should do to prepare himself for an imminent crisis. That's the point of this story. Not the fact that he stole property, so to speak. He misused it and wasted the possessions that didn't belong to him. And even repeated that after he was fired for doing that. I mean, that was kind of like a, oh my gosh, type situation, you know, but that's not the response here. That's not the point of this parable. The point of the parable is that he anticipated what was about to happen and he prepared himself for it. He did what was necessary to protect himself or provide for himself. Now, back to verse 8. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. And he uses that word in a positive sense. And I can tell you he's positive, not negative, because of what he says afterwards. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. There's the application of the parable. He refers to the people of this world. Literally, that says the sons, huios, of this age, eon. All right? Sons of this age. And he says they are more shrewd. That's the word phronimos. Then he refers to the people of the light, which literally is the sons of the light. So here's the main point of this parable. Jesus urges believers, people of the light, sons of the light, Jesus urges believers to act prudently as unbelievers do, but with godly motives and behavior, of course. Now, this is basically the same theme as the parable of the ten virgins, right?
That's right.
Basically the same theme. You need to be prudent. You need to anticipate possibilities and prepare for them. Even though in this parable of the shrewd manager, it seems like what he did was a crime. He should have been locked up for it. Jesus didn't go there. The point of this parable was he acted shrewdly. He anticipated what was about to happen, and he prepared for it. That was the basic point of this parable. In other words, Christians can be naive about earthly matters and call it faith.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious. This is my application. This is my interpretation of this. Christians can be naive about matters, practical matters, and they call it faith. Well, I'm not going to worry about that. Jesus will take care of me. Yeah, we need to trust the Lord, but we also need to be prudent, because that's what Jesus is talking about here. Be prudent. Use common sense. God gave you common sense. Use it. Proverbs 22:3 is a similar passage. Now, again, we're going back to the Old Testament. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Now, the word, we see the same thing also in Proverbs 27:12. It's almost verbatim. The phrase prudent man doesn't use the Greek word phronimos in the Septuagint. Rather, it uses panergos, which means crafty. And we see that word used in 2 Corinthians 12:16. It's the same Greek word, panergos. Paul is writing, he says, yet crafty fellow that I am, I caught you by trickery. This is an example of Paul's sarcasm. He used it quite a bit. But this is Paul speaking rather sarcastically. He says, crafty fellow that I am. Crafty is the same word. Now, this word here, panergos, in a broader sense, it describes someone who's capable of doing anything. Capable of doing anything, either good or bad. Used negatively, it refers to someone who is skillful with deception, someone who is underhanded. They'll do whatever it takes to gain an advantage. That's the negative application of that word. But the positive application refers to a person who shows cleverness, sensibility, and sound judgment in making decisions. In other words, the Old Testament and New Testament both commend people who choose to act wisely when facing difficulties. That's the point of this word. The original word, phronimos, as well as this other one, panergos. The Old Testament and New Testament both commend people who act wisely when facing difficulties. Any questions or comments about anything we've covered here? Okay, back to Ponemos, being shrewd, prudent. I have some questions for you. How does prudence or shrewdness apply to our covenant relationship with God? Talking about the kingdom and the covenant. This is a godly attribute of shrewdness. God uses common sense in dealing with situations, doesn't he?
Yes.
Okay. He expects us to do the same. So how does prudence or shrewdness apply to our covenant relationship with God? Well, I think we need to use common sense and shrewdness in our interactions with God.
Yes.
For example, responding appropriately to what he tells us or warns us about, right? Jesus said a person's wise if he does what I say.
Right.
And that applies to our relationship with God, because Jesus was God's representative. He was the personification of God here on the earth. So shrewdness or common sense applies to our covenant relationship with God. Make it priority, protect it, honor it in all cases. And whenever you realize what God is intending to do or what he tells you to do, do it. Common sense. Next, another question here. How does prudence apply to our relationship with other people, whether they're Christians or non-Christians? Well, Jesus said the people of the light, which is us, need to be prudent, sensible, and insightful. That involves every situation in life, including dealing with other people. Okay, so people of the light, believers, need to be more prudent, sensible, and insightful in everything that we do, in all of our dealings with people. So how is prudence or shrewdness relevant to our activity in the kingdom? Well, Phronimus indicates that we should be aware of the king's intention. We're talking about the Father's kingdom. So we need to be aware of the Father, of the king's intent and his actions, what he's doing. And we need to use good judgment and common sense in kingdom matters. When we act, we are kingdom representatives at all times. That's not something that just you put on whenever you encounter a situation. You are a kingdom representative all the time. And what you do affects God's kingdom, directly or indirectly, whether you realize it or not. So we need to use shrewdness, prudence, common sense in all of our kingdom activities, which covers just about everything in life.
Yes, sir.
Here's another one. How does prudence apply to our interaction with evil spirits?
And not come in interaction with them.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, don't interact with them.
Well, as you're pointing out there, in our interaction with evil spirits, we need to be shrewd in the sense we are aware of their intent,
yes,
and their strategy, how they do things and why.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a key part of shrewdness, yes, being alert to these things and the potential for harm they might inflict on us.
Yes.
Well, there are times when we need to interact with them.
Sometimes.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes. Now, if you're in an environment and it's demonically controlled, unless God has told you to stay there and do something, you probably need to leave. All right? That's part of prudence or shrewdness.
Yeah. Yeah.
But part of it also is not, I think what we're saying here is do not be naive about spiritual danger. Don't be naive. But on the other hand, you also need to recognize your spiritual authority and know how to use it.
Right. And so we could react that way too, as far as Satan is concerned.
And I think maybe you were saying earlier too about relying on the Holy Spirit to show you what's,
yes,
really going on,
yes,
and show you how to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right, my fourth question in this area here is, how do we develop prudence? Whether you think you have it or not, how do you develop it? If you have it, how can you improve it? I think one of the keys there is by choosing to be alert.
Yes.
People are oblivious because they're not paying attention.
Right. Exactly.
They choose not to be paying attention. Well, didn't you see that? No.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to choose to be alert to what's going on around us, spiritually and physically and psychologically, what's going on around us. Also by asking the Holy Spirit to make us aware of what's happening around us and showing us how we respond to it. All right, let's consider zeal now. Dealing with a couple of words from the same Greek word group, one is the noun zelos, which is excessive fervor to do something or accomplish some end. Notice the word excessive. I don't think it necessarily means beyond reason or beyond need, but it means great, okay? even if others do consider it excessive. And it's translated zeal, but also jealousy, as we will see a little bit later. And then there's the verb form from the same word group, zelo, which means to be zealous, to strive for, to be devoted to something, or to set one's heart on something. All right? That's to be zealous, zelo. John 2, Jesus cleared the temple, the merchants and the money changers. Remember that? And it says, his disciples remembered that it is written, zeal for your house will consume me. The word zeal is the noun zelos. Galatians 4, Paul is writing to the people at Galatia, and he says, it is fine to be zealous, provided the purpose is good. Now, the word fine there, you know, in the English, we say, oh, that's fine, whatever, you know. No, this word fine here means good, fine, praiseworthy, beautiful, or better. It's not an ambivalent word. It has very clear positive meanings. In fact, many translations translate that instead of saying it is fine to be, other translations say it is always good to be whatever, and in this case, zealous. And it's good to be zealous, that's the verb zelo. Provided the purpose is good. That involves prudence, discretion, insight. Okay, what is good in this situation? You follow me? Okay, now we're talking about zeal here. Let's go into Galatians 5. The acts of the sinful nature are obvious. Now, last week we addressed this passage and we said that the sinful nature really is the word sarx, which is flesh. Remember that? So the acts of the flesh are obvious. Sinful immorality, impurity and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions and factions. The word jealousy is the noun zelos, zeal. Notice that it fits jealousy almost right in the middle of that list of things we recognize as being really wrong, right? Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, adultery, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage. And this isn't a list of from good to bad or from worse to better. No, this is just a list of things that have all in common. They're all acts of the sinful nature. So jealousy is really being zealous about personal gain. I'm jealous of you because you have this that I don't have. I would want that myself, okay? So that's zeal motivated by self-centeredness, selfishness. You see that? I really want that. You have it and I don't. I really want that. Some people would say, I will do anything I can to get that, even if I have to take it from you.
Right.
All right? That's just following on to the jealousy. But this is still the same word, translated zeal or jealousy, depending on how it's used. Now, is zeal inherently evil?
No.
Yeah. It depends on what motivates it, right? Mm-hmm. Or whether it's for a good purpose, as he said, right? Verse Galatians 4:18. It's fine to be zealous, it's good. It's praiseworthy, commendable to be zealous, provided the purpose is good. If you have a wrong purpose, then it's not beneficial. Self-centeredness is what makes it evil, you see? If your jealousy or your zeal is motivated by self-centeredness, then it becomes evil. Look at 2 Corinthians 9. For I know your eagerness to help, and I have been boasting about it to the Macedonians, telling them that since last year you and Achaia were ready to give, and your enthusiasm has stirred most of them to action. The word enthusiasm there is zelos, zeal. So what effect did their zeal have on others? Encouraging them to do what? Yes. Your enthusiasm stirred most of them to action, to do something. Their zeal, what they had done, motivated others to be zealous as well. Zeal is contagious. If you're around somebody who's enthused about something, don't you become more enthused about it? Okay, certainly more than you were to begin with.
Turned down or turned off, either one.
Right. Look at 1 Corinthians 14. Follow the way of love and eagerly desire spiritual gifts, especially the gift of prophecy. Now the phrase eagerly desire is the verb zelo. That means to be zealous for spiritual gifts in this case. To strive for spiritual gifts in this case. To set your heart on spiritual gifts in this case. And the word spiritual gifts there is an adjective, pneumatikos, which means spiritual, whether it's spiritual in nature or spiritual in origin. Now, I'm sorry, I have kind of a bit of a peeve about this use of this word pneumatikos. 25 out of 30 times the word pneumatikos is used in the New Testament. The NIV translates it as spiritual, because that's what it is. It's an adjective. It says this is spiritual in nature or spiritual in origin. Three times it translates the word pneumatikos as spiritual gift. And the word gift is inserted by the translators based on what they see in the context. And twice it's translated spiritual person. And again, the word person is inserted by the translators because of what they see in the context. I suggest we go a step beyond that. That we should eagerly desire or be zealous for spiritual things, spiritual matters. In other words, don't focus exclusively on spiritual gifts and ignore spiritual authority. Don't focus exclusively on spiritual gifts and ignore the spiritual kingdom we are members of. Eagerly desire spiritual gifts. I think that we should eagerly desire or be zealous about all spiritual matters. Look, you realize that your spirits are eternal, but your bodies are only temporal, right? These bodies only last for a few years. You realize the spiritual realm governs the physical realm. It does. And you realize that God's kingdom is spiritual and his battle with Satan is spiritual, right? The point I'm trying to make is the spiritual matter, spiritual things are more significant than things of this world, things of this life. So eagerly desire spiritual things. Colossians 3:1-2 states that we should set our hearts and minds on things above. Set our hearts and minds on spiritual matters. Setting your heart on something is the key, or is it basically the definition of zealous, or being zeal. Because the word zeal is translated, set your heart on. It doesn't use the word in the Colossians 3, but the concept is still there. Set your hearts and minds on things above, that is, on spiritual things. Now, I realize that it's possible to be spiritually weird or flaky. I've known people like that, and I've occasionally done it myself a few times, maybe more times than I realized. But most of us could be a lot more zealous and shrewd about spiritual matters than we are. We can all increase our zeal for God, our zeal for his kingdom, our zeal for spiritual matters in general. We can all increase our zeal. Any questions or comments about what on zeal? All right, I have some questions for you. Surprise. How does zeal apply to our covenant relationship with God?
As the last church mentioned in Scripture was,
right? Don't want to be lukewarm, that's right. Instead, we need to be white hot, zealous, right? Let me remind you that a covenant is a loving, enduring relationship in which each partner focuses on the other's well-being, including their needs, interests, and desires. There's no self-centeredness in covenant. Self-centeredness violates covenant. So zeal expresses itself in the loving, enduring focus, in lovingly focusing on the covenant partner. That is zeal. I'm zealous for their well-being. I'm zealous for their benefit, their advantage. I'm zealous for doing what they want to have done. I'm zealous. In this case, I'm zealous for God because I'm in covenant relationship with him. You follow me? And it's not just a matter of, I really want to make him happy. No, it's about being zealous about making him happy, about pleasing him, all right? Not just, I see things need done, so I'll take care of it. No, be zealous about spiritual matters. That's what I'm saying here. Be white hot with zeal for God. He won't let you down. How is zeal relevant to our activity in the kingdom? We need to be zealous for whatever God is doing in his kingdom, right? As Gene was mentioning a while ago, when you think about the Almighty loving you, saving you from your eternal destiny that you deserved, adopting you as his child, including you in everything he does, giving you a position of authority in his kingdom, making the kingdom resources available to you, generously blessing you, how can you not be wildly zealous for him and his kingdom? So how do we develop zeal? I would suggest you think about your loving Father and all he's done for you, who he is, and your zeal for him will increase.
Pray and seek his face.
Yep. Focus on him. Concluding statement here, I encourage you to be prudent or shrewd in everything you do. and serve the only true God with all the zealous attention he deserves. Look, this concludes our study of the Kingdom and the Covenant. It's been my honor to present this material to you. I've learned a lot in the process, and I hope you have too. Thank you. The Lord bless you.